This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. It is the 30th day of June 2011, and today I'm talking to James Roberts from the sunny climes of, or should I say the rainy climes of the UK. And he is going to talk with us tonight about the public school system in the UK and some of the interesting things that students are learning these days. So, James, thank you very much for joining us today.
Oh, it's good to be here, James. Thank you. Yes.
All right. Excellent. Well, okay. Well, let's start just a little bit by establishing who you are and letting the listeners know a little bit about where you're coming from. This is our first time talking, and I'm sure many of the listeners won't know who you are. So let's just talk a little bit about who you are and your background.
Right. Yes. I'm a chemistry teacher in England. I've been teaching now for 5 years. It's the only job I've done, apart from an industrial placement. I went to teaching partly because I wanted to inspire people about science and partly because I worked in a lab for a year during my degree and it was pretty boring. Over the years, it's gone from inspiring students to sort of noticing a lot about how the science has been taken out of the curriculum, and it's now becoming more about global warming, and it's sort of pervading the entire curriculum now from what 11-year-olds learn to right up to what 16 to 18-year-olds learn. And yes, it's I'm getting a bit frustrated with the lack of the science being taken out. So yeah.
I can certainly relate to that, because as I'm sure many of the listeners know, I myself am a teacher here in Japan, and even in just teaching English in elementary and junior high school, in our junior high school textbook, we have a lot of green propaganda is a polite way to put it, and it's kind of bizarre seeing it sneak into every corner of the curriculum, even when you're just learning English or whatever. But there it is. So I can certainly relate to that. Before yes. we go further, I should just establish that yes, your name is not James Roberts, but we are using a pseudonym tonight to protect your innocence from yes. the school board or whoever might want to retaliate. But I understand, because certainly this is a sensitive topic, and this is the type of environment that unfortunately has been created in the schools, where even speaking out about things like this could have repercussions. So that yes. aside, let's get into some of the things that the children are learning, and why is it so frustrating for you?
Okay, yes. Well, basically, it's so frustrating because... it's repetitive for me, because I'm basically telling them a class at least once a day that carbon dioxide is bad. We're making a lot of carbon dioxide, and there are alternative forms of energy, but they all have their downsides, and there's no proper solution to the problem, really. So, for example, in year seven, which is what you would be in England if you're 11, and then have your 12th birthday. We talk about different forms of energy. There's a page called the Energy Crisis in the textbook, a section of that, and there's a section about global warming. And the pages in the textbook basically talk about the different forms of energy. Fossil fuels are creating lots of carbon dioxide, and then global warming, the effects of global warming. So, for example, floods, the ice caps are melting, etc., and that's all being caused by the carbon dioxide that we're creating with our fossil fuels. In year eight, we can we still talk about alternative fuels and overpopulation. So that's that enters the curriculum then, which is year eight is when you're 12 to 13. Year nine, 13 to 14, it's the same thing. We have a unit called Transport for the Future, which discusses the different kinds of fuels that chemicals use. And then it carries on to GCSE with alternative fuels again. And so, as you can see, it's getting a bit repetitive. And then into GCSE, years 10 to 11, where the students are 14 to 16. And then they could decide to leave school or do A-levels. And so A-level students who are 16 to 18 are pretty academic when they do chemistry. They're very motivated. But there's still things about alternative fuels, mainly about biofuel in chemistry and how that's created. And I can see them getting quite frustrated with having to learn about it again. So as you can see, it's getting quite repetitive just on the global warming thing. It goes all 7 years of that I teach, I have to say something about global warming, man-made carbon dioxide, and how that's damaging to the planet. So yes.
Yes, well, not surprising, but no less frustrating for that. Well, absolutely. So let's establish then from your own personal perspective then, what is your own take on this? Because obviously it sounds like you're coming from a more skeptical position, but where exactly do you stand on these issues?
I'm very skeptical about it, and I think part of the reason why I was skeptical about it was because I had to repeat it so many times, and I had to say it, and yet in the few years I've been alive, the climate hasn't really changed overall. People say we've had the hottest summer in England. We've had the hottest 3 summers in England over the past 20 years, or, you know, things like that. But, you know, you could just put that in all to cycles. I think I started off being idealistic and wanting to save the planet and wanting to reduce carbon dioxide. But I think lack of empirical evidence, and basically the fact that I've just had to repeat it. And I think the fact that I've just had to say it so many times has made me a bit suspicious of whether it's actually true. I mean, why would I have to say it 7 years, the same thing 7 years in a row, if it's true? I mean, there are things in science that don't get as much mention as carbon dioxide, which are far more important for a science education. And and they don't get repeated as often as people are making carbon dioxide, and that's damaging the planet. So, that's
exactly the point. And let me just quote from some of the materials that you sent to me. You sent me some materials from the different textbooks that the children are using. And there's a section on global warming. I'm not sure. This is from year 7, apparently. And it says that all scientists agree that the Earth is getting hotter. This is global warming. By 2100, the average temperature of the Earth may be between 2 and 5 degrees hotter than it is now. And then it talks about different scientists talking about their specialties. So I'm a biologist. I study polar habitats. I predict that by 2050, polar bears will be an endangered species. I'm an agriculturist. I predict that by 2020, the climate in some African countries may be so hot and dry that food crop harvests are halved. I'm an oceanographer. Ice is melting in the Arctic and Antarctic, and seawater expands when it heats up. So I predict that sea levels will rise. Millions of people living near the sea may lose their homes and lives to flooding. So there's really no qualifications in there. There's nothing to indicate any sort of skepticality within that position. It's presented quite as cut and dry fact, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yes, and they've got all the images that people will see quite a lot, such as the classic graph of the carbon dioxide levels rising from the 60s to 2000, and picture of the carbon footprint. And all scientists agree is an Well, that's not true. Exactly. It's, you know, some of it's blatant lies, and then some of it's just sort of images that students are going to relate to so they can get into it more and remember it better. I agree. It's not exactly showing you both sides of the argument, which is ironically what the changes to the curriculum that happened a few years ago said that they wanted students to do. They wanted students to, you know, think critically and debate issues of the day, but the textbook, there are several pages of the textbook which only give one side of the argument, which is another reason why I'm getting a bit more jaded with teaching science. So, yes.
Yeah. Yes, well, this, certainly the page I'm looking at only presents one side of it, and the best example of something that even presents something that might challenge the ideas presented here is simply the question, do you think it's up to scientists to decide what to do about global warming? Why? Which I think is a leading question in and of itself, because it's obviously saying that scientists should be the ones at the forefront. I mean, that's the obvious answer to that, but very interesting, yes. Very interesting. So it's certainly leading students in a certain direction.
Yes, that's correct. Yes, it's, and it happens so often. I mean, that's just 1 year, but they get something like that every year for 7 years. And by the end of it, well, some of them are sick of it, but some of them believe quite passionately in the man-made global warming, and they'll carry that on afterwards. And I know that universities are doing quite a lot of environmental degrees, so they can carry it on even further in their education. So it's certainly setting them up to want to reduce their carbon footprint, as we say in England. I don't know if that's something that's got out globally. Do you know what that means?
Reducing your carbon footprint?
Footprint. Oh, it's just...
Yes, absolutely. Yes. I think that's pretty much universal by now.
Okay.
Yeah, well, okay. Yeah. For those people out there who may not have heard of the carbon footprint, explain it to them.
Well, it's basically... the carbon footprint is basically just a measure of how much carbon dioxide you'd be using. And so you think about how much carbon dioxide you'd release by leaving your light on or using a car. And I think the idea is the more carbon dioxide you use, the bigger footprint you make. So
the best thing to do is to die and to stop producing CO2. But even your decomposing corpse will unfortunately contribute some greenhouse gases. I know. So.
It's a bit of a lose-lose situation.
Yeah,
yes,
it is. I mean, it would be better to have never existed at all, really.
Yes. So, but yeah, the textbook is very good at presenting lose-lose situations with the alternative energy anyway. So, it goes on later in the year, but in GCSE textbooks, they talk about the different energy fuels alternatives. So they talk about, they have all fuel alternatives, which all sound very good, but then they provide bad points, such as example, biofuel reduces space for growing crops, which causes starvation. And same with ethanol. Hydrogen sounds very clean and energy efficient, but you've got to use electricity to produce it, and so you'd be burning coal to do it. And so I remember how I felt when I heard this. I just felt, at the end of all this, I just felt very confused and unable to think about what to do. So I think some of the students will be feeling that as well. They're just sort of paralyzed with the with confusion and sort of the idea that there is actually no solution, and you know, we'll just have to carry on burning fossil fuels and create global warming. So as well as making them feel bad for burning fossil fuels, it's quite demoralizing to make them think they can't actually stop it, which is quite bad. And I think, well, yeah, some of them might be motivated to try and reduce it, which will involve them spending a lot of money on time and money on trying to reduce carbon dioxide, and while some of them just get very demoralized about it. So, yeah.
Well, it certainly begs the question of whether you have a lot of students challenging you on this material or trying to find other solutions or asking about that type of thing, or if they just tend to accept what you're saying.
No one's challenged me about when I've talked about man-made global warming. I mean, one student's told me that her father doesn't believe in it when she asked me if I did, and I said I didn't really.
So did you hit the red button to make her explode, or to make her father explode?
No, her father.
Yes, I'm referring to a wonderful little commercial they had, a campaign that was launched in the UK about reducing climate footprints, and basically the teacher hits a button and makes all the skeptical students explode into a pile of blood and guts.
That's good. I haven't actually seen that. No, but
please don't. Oh, it's quite disgusting, actually.
Oh, okay. Oh, right. It's very visual then. So to get the message across, I suppose. No. Her father doesn't believe in it either, and I don't. And I sort of said I don't really believe in it. So she said, "Yeah, my dad doesn't." But my opinion sort of leaked across into lessons, and I sort of seemed quite skeptical to my A-level students, and there were two who were quite passionately for reducing carbon dioxide, and they'd been to a weekend away where you can learn all about it. It was like a science camp, I expect. And they learned a lot about reducing carbon dioxide, man-made carbon dioxide. So I got challenged by them because I expressed my skeptical views, and they were very passionately for carbon dioxide being produced by people and causing problems, which is unfortunate because they're very bright as well. And so it seems like there's a lot of money and a lot of organizations who are taking on the best students and trying to get them to believe in this.
It's completely the other way around. If you don't believe in it, that means that you're rolling in money and you're funded by the oil companies, don't you know?
Oh, right. Oh, I didn't believe. I didn't think that, actually.
I'm still waiting for my paycheck, but
Yes. My paycheck's going to be a bit lower today because I'm on strike. So it would be nice if the oil company cut me a check, actually. But So I've not been actually challenged about by students who don't believe in man-made global warming, but I haven't been challenged by students who do. When I've expressed, I've come across as skeptical. So I've not gone so far as to say I don't believe in it in front of a class, but they can see I'm being skeptical, and they've challenged me about it. So, yeah.
Well, that's interesting. And it, you know, that is a good way of at least getting students to think about their beliefs and asking them to back them up in some ways. I mean, that's healthy and contributory to something like the type of debate that I think we need to start having. So, I mean, this raises the question for me, if it's not too personal, how old you are and how long you've been teaching.
I'm 28. I've been teaching for 5 years now.
So when you were going through the school system, was it a similar type of indoctrination, or was it quite different when you were going through?
No, I think it was similar. When I was going through school, I was all for environmentalism and reducing carbon dioxide. It was a time when Captain Planet was on the TV. I don't know if you've heard of Captain Planet.
I can't say as I have, no.
Oh, it's a story about all the villains are sort of evil industrialists who want to make money and don't care about the environment. I think there's someone called Loot and Plunder who I think there's one episode where he doesn't mind an oil spill being caused, and then there's Gaia, who's the goddess of the earth, who recruits four young people and gives them each a magical ring, and they can use the powers of their ring to summon Captain Planet, who fights off these evil, and his only weakness is pollution. If he gets pollution on him, then he weakens. But it's like kryptonite to him. So I remember enthusiastically watching that. I remember it, my geography class, actually. There was quite a lot about alternative energy. There's a bit in physics about how electricity is produced. So when I was younger, I was all for reducing carbon dioxide and, doing things like switching off lights and various things. But it's only since I've taught it myself and seen all of the messages and propaganda in the school system that I've become jaded with it, and thought that, if you're repeating it this many times, then you know there must be something wrong with it. I mean, it's everywhere. It's not just me. It's on the telly. It's on the radio. It's in books. It's everywhere. And it's also, well, it sounds like it's not just in science either. It's in geography, and it sounds like, well, in Japan it's in English, as you said. It's in pretty much every aspect of school now. In fact, we have a group of students. We call it Student Voice. It's like a school council, and we have a whole section of them which is devoted to making the school environmentally friendly. So, yes.
Yeah. If it was such self-evident truth that is known by all and agreed on by all, it wouldn't need to be constantly promoted like that, would it?
Exactly. And it is constantly promoted all the time, from all angles. It is, yes, yeah.
Well, so I assume then that this is not just a case of man-made carbon dioxide causing climate change. I mean, I assume there must be many other aspects to the indoctrination that these children are receiving.
Oh, well, yes, there are. The first one I sent you the textbook to, which was the first one I noticed, was the one about biometrics in schools. And a couple of years ago, our school now has introduced a fingerprint system where you have your fingerprint registered, and you, instead of having to pay money to the person selling you lunch, you have to put your fingerprint on a machine, put the money in the machine, and then use the fingerprint. And I think it was introduced to us as making it more convenient for everyone and just making everything quicker. And well, from my experience, I don't think it particularly makes anything quicker, because you just have to queue up for a machine now, and the queues in the lunch hall are still just as long and take just as long, because the students have to still select their food. So I don't think it works from that point of view. However, it does mean that students have all registered their fingerprints. And I think that as they're young, they probably think that this is normal. And it's not just the head of the school that's sort of condone this. It's also in the science textbook, and once again it's quite one-sided. It's about a boy who likes using biometrics to get books from the library because they're quicker and more because it's quicker and more convenient. I'll read a passage when it's loaded up the page, but that's quite one-sided. There's also bits in the science textbook about how vaccines are useful, but it doesn't mention anything about possible mercury in them. There's also things about genetically modifying crops to produce insulin, and it says that, you know, it might be better to get it from milk actually, but then it still says that there is a lot of overpopulation, and genetically modified foods might help reduce the overpopulation problem. So there are plenty of things in the science textbook, and also being introduced into the school. And it means that I have refused to give my fingerprint over to the system, which means I can't really buy any lunch at school. I have to bring mine in. And the only thing you have is an honesty box in the staff room where you can get a cake if you put 70p in. That's about
it. Wow. That is all so horrifying, but the fingerprints especially so. I mean, to me, that is absolutely a nightmarish thought even to have, let alone to know that that's actually implemented and that so many people have accepted it. Are you the only holdout, or are there others?
I've not really made it that public. Everyone I've spoken to has done it, I don't know about any of the students. I'm not actually told. Spoken to many people about it. I didn't think there was any sort of opposition to it when it was introduced either. So
you were there during the rollout of this program.
I was there. It was announced in the staff room. It was just sort of. Everyone just took it as a. It was yet another thing to listen to before you had to go off and prepare for your day. Really, it wasn't really. There wasn't really much time given to oppose it or say anything about it, but I just refused.
What about
to...
the parents? How were they involved in this?
Well, I don't think I've not heard about any parents complaining about it. No, I've not had any students come and tell me that say anything about the biometric system. I think they've just all accepted it. Although, I was at reception one day and I overheard the receptionist. Rolling off a list of everything that the student had bought to that parent, because from the conversation it sounded like she'd given the student £20 at the beginning of the week and they'd already spent it. So I think that particular parent liked the idea because she could keep an eye on what their child was buying. But that's the only sort of parental not feedback I've got, that, you know, it seems like one parent likes it because she can keep an eye on what the children are buying. But that wasn't actually mentioned to us. The only thing that was mentioned, it'd be quicker and simpler. Oh, and also that the image of our fingerprint would not be stored. It'd be stored as a code. So it'd be quite hard to get the image of our fingerprint. But it wasn't mentioned that we'll have anyone keeping track of what we're buying. Although it seems like the parents seem to like that, as she could find out why her child is spending so much money on the lunch food. So, yeah.
Well, surely this program could not have been introduced just with a note home with the child one day to say, oh, by the way, we're going to take their fingerprints. I mean, there must have been a meeting or something. I mean, I can't believe the amount of apathy around something like this.
I didn't hear about any meeting. That's not to say that one didn't happen, but from what I've seen, there was a lot of apathy. There was apathy from the staff when it was announced, and there was apathy. And it's not a talking point amongst students, and there are still plenty of students who get it, who get their lunch, so they must have given their fingerprint in. Somehow, there just seems to be been a lot of acceptance of it, and I'm not sure why. It's been done across the country, and I've sent links of government documents, and someone's written a post. Referring to people who oppose it as Luddites, and they said a statistic, apparently 98% of parents of children in schools with biometrics accept it. I don't know where that statistic came from, but there's also blogs opposing it. So I know that someone opposed it, someone's written a blog post opposing it, but at the school it was just accepted. Everyone was told it'd be quicker, simpler, and their images won't be stored anywhere. The images of their fingerprints won't be stored anywhere, it'll be stored as a code. It seems to be accepted. There may have been a meeting about it, but I didn't know about that.
That's just so sickening. I feel like I should be enraged about the program itself, but I actually just feel so sick to my stomach that there are so many people who not only don't question it, but don't even think to question what's going on or what biometrics is or why it's being applied or what it means that people can be tracking every purchase that you make or how this is being indoctrinated into children who are going to be the future of a society which is obviously going to be facing these types of questions and how to implement this technology on a societal scale. It's so overwhelming to me, and to think that people are not questioning this really makes me despair more than anything else.
Well, yes, I don't know why I don't know how it's happening. But I think it's happening from all angles apart from schools. For example, I mean, I don't watch much TV. There is a point that I don't watch much TV, but I do watch Doctor Who, and I don't know if you know, if you've been following Doctor Who at all.
My parents are British, so I'm well
possibly.
Familiar with Doctor
it's
Who.
It's a British institution. Well, in the new series, there've been, in fact, the first, In fact, the second and third episodes, there was, well, in the first episode, was a two, it was part of a two-parter. There were some aliens all across the world who people can't remember they've seen. So what the Doctor does, he installs a chip in people's hands, which has a recording device that they can record what they're saying when they see they see the alien. So when they see an alien, they switch it on and say that they've seen the alien. So it seems like, you know, he's installing a chip on their hand, which is the next stage in biometrics, having, you know, chipping people. And then there's another episode where someone gets a black spot on their hand, and it turns out that it's for good reason. They're taking a skin sample. There's an alien taking a skin sample in order to heal them. So I think it's not just in schools that we're, that this imagery of biometrics is being accepted. I think it's in popular media as well. So, and I'm, that's only one aspect of it. I'm not sure about all the media that children take in nowadays. I don't really have time to keep up with it, but I think what I'm telling people in schools is only a small part of a larger plan, because it doesn't seem like a coincidence that this imagery of having chips in your hand and taking fingerprints, I'm sure it's across a lot of more popular shows, but you'd have to speak to someone else about that, because
there's no doubt that it's an interlocking mechanism, and that it's been studied and written about for decades, for a better part of a century now, how science fiction is used to implant ideas in the public. And H.G. Wells was a very politically motivated person who was very much tied in with the British gentry of the time, and involved, heavily involved in the eugenics movement and all of that, and wrote the original draft charter of the UN Charter of Human Rights and things like that. And everyone just thinks he was, you know, War of the Worlds, or, you know, writing science fiction stories. No, he was really trying to implant ideas in the popular consciousness. And I think anyone who thinks that science fiction to a large extent isn't used for that type of thing would be deluding themselves, and lots of other popular media as well, of course. And we have many, many examples of that. But to me, it's disturbing that so much of it is aimed at children. And as you say, these children are growing up thinking that this is usual. And in 20 years from now, we could see a very, very different society, with very few people bothering to even bat an eyelash over the types of changes that are about to take place. Unless we can, I guess, indoctrinate, inculcate a different sense of what these technologies are and where they're potentially heading.
Yes, exactly. Yes, we need to. And I'm skeptical in class about global warming, but I need to think about other things I can do. And what I could do is offer my opinion in class to the students and see if that gets across to some of them. But it's quite a large machine that we're dealing with. And I was gonna say something else. Sorry, it's gone. But it is across all society. There's a link. I've sent a link of a government document which actually acknowledges the fact, as one of the counter arguments to biometrics, that the document uses those words. People might think that we're softening children up by using them in schools to introduce something later. So I think the government is well aware of the fact that if you introduce children to something, then they'll be more likely to accept it, which is probably why that supermarkets haven't yet got biometric fingerprint systems in yet. Because when I was a child, you know, I had a debit card when I was 14, but that's about as high tech as it got. So now this is the next stage. It'll take a while. I think they know that it'll take a while. And so in the next generation, there may be another stage. But it's definitely aimed at children. And the government know that if in their own documents, they're printing that as a counter argument for them to argue the case for.
And as you pointed out, this isn't being introduced in a contextless way, with no opposing viewpoint or no critical thinking about what's really being introduced, and no sense of the background of biometrics or where it came from, or Francis Galton, or all of that type of history, and where that really came from and what it was meant for. So when it's introduced in a contextless way, without any, devoid of any meaning or any scrutiny, then it, obviously people are going to be more likely than not to just simply take it on board and accept it as part of their life.
Yes. I can read the bit of the textbook about biometrics if you want.
I've got it in front of me.
Yes, Ben reads a lot. He changes his library books every week. He used to have a library card, but now he just puts his finger in a scanner. It's very quick, and he doesn't have to worry about losing his card. Everybody's fingerprint has a unique pattern of lines. Even identical twins have slightly different fingerprints. Using fingerprints, features like fingerprints to identify people is called biometrics. Some of our other features are also unique. Most biometric systems use the shape of your face, the patterns on the coloured part of your eye, iris, or your fingerprints. But we also have unique voice prints and different ways of walking. Since 2007, biometric data has been added to every UK passport. So that's a bit of the textbook that says how biometrics is very quick and convenient, and it also means that you have to carry around fewer cards. Then there's some questions, and then there's an activity entitled "Which biometric feature to use?" So obviously the bit at the top has mentioned several unique features that humans have. So this is when the students discuss what biometric feature could be used to open your front door as you walk towards the house, or which would be best to check who needed to pay for a meal from the canteen. So it's coming up with ways in which biometrics could be used, but it doesn't mention anything about how it stores data. It doesn't mention anything about how anyone can keep track of what you're buying or what you're borrowing from the library, or when you enter your house, which is very sensitive data. I'm sure if that fell into the wrong hands, then burglars would be running towards your house as soon as you left it. So it's all presented in a positive light, in the sense it's all very convenient. It's just there for our convenience and nothing else. So yeah.
And it's even presented in the in that task-based education drivel of trying to come up with ideas for solving the problem of how to open your door and things like that. Yeah, it's absolutely revolting, really. Absolutely sickening. So we have the global warming indoctrination. We have the biometrics attenuation, the acceptance of the coming biometric society. Any other aspects of the indoctrination that you see from your perspective?
Yes. Well, you just mentioned about the task-based society, it's in school as well. I mean, everyone, once you get into year 10, which is when you're 14, that is when you start studying for qualifications that people will look for when you go for jobs, your GCSEs. And so every teacher's probably telling them that they need to learn this for the exam. They need to get good results in their exam. They need to do well in their exams. They need to get a good grade. So they probably hear that several times a day. And so if you look at some of the GCSE exams, there's a lot of questions about carbon dioxide, global warming, using alternative fuels. And so that's linking in the idea that you've got to really memorize this stuff about man-made climate change in order to be successful. So that's another carrot in order to get people to learn about global warming. And in fact, I looked through a GCSE exam, a chemistry GCSE exam, before the interview. It was the June 2010 exam from the AQA syllabus. So anyone can come and look this up, and the link will be on the site. And I looked through it, and out of the 45 marks that you could get for the exam, 13 of them were obtained by saying something about burning fuels or alternative fuels or global warming or carbon dioxide. And so you could get a D if you knew nothing apart from carbon dioxide. To get a D, you needed 12 marks, and you could have got 13 marks if you knew about alternative fuels, global warming, man-made climate change. And considering there are other things in chemistry, such as the structure of the atom, which is central to chemistry, or balancing equations, having a quarter of a chemistry paper on sort of the environment and man-made global warming is... It's quite obscene, really. So it's also part. It's also linked into making students think they've got to be successful to learn this. So as well as they've made sure that the students learn this. So instead of just having a teacher mention it in class, the teacher is also telling them that it's central to their success that they have to learn about man-made global warming.
It's not just obscene. It's not just an affront to chemistry. It seems to me it's insulting the intelligence of the teachers who are being forced to do this. I mean, certainly you and I imagine many other chemistry teachers didn't get into this to teach about man-made global warming and carbon dioxide. I mean, what do other teachers think about this type of taking over of the curriculum by this ridiculous sideshow that's been foisted on the curriculum? I mean, certainly other teachers must see what's going on.
I think they're just quite apathetic about it. I haven't heard anyone. I haven't actually spoken to any teachers who think that this is a problem. And now that there are younger people my age, most teachers my age actually got quite a lot of this at school. So they probably think it's normal as well now, unless they've been listening to other sources. So actually, there is quite a lot of apathy about it in the school. And I think it may be apathy brought on by the fact that they just don't think about it because it's been around them since they've grown up. Or it may be apathy about the fact that most teachers are very overworked and thinking about what's on their curriculum is the last thing to do. Teachers also have to think about getting results, making sure the students get the results and the league tables for the school. So thinking about what they're teaching is probably the last thing on their minds. It's making sure the students get the results. And if that's part of the specification, then they're going to teach it to make sure students get good results. So actually, there's been quite a lot of apathy from the other teachers in the school. None of them really seem to. I've broached it a few times with the staff, my fellow science teachers, and they almost think it's a bit of a joke, really. They think, oh, it's, you know, he's going off on one again. But but yeah, it's all about getting the students the results, which then links into having to teach them about global warming, because that's such a big part of the exam. And so the students and then the students are motivated to get the results. And so actually, no one really has much time to think about this.
It's a perfect snapshot of society in some ways, because you have these teachers who think that they're sitting there giving education to these children, but really they're just being told what to say by these boards and these things above them, and they're the ones being trained into, you know, indoctrinating the youth, and it's just this perfect circle of indoctrination and unquestioning acceptance, and it's just, to me, it really encapsulates where we are as a society in so many ways, unfortunately.
Yeah, so you no longer have any say on what we teach. And it's all about getting exam results now. And I didn't really go into teaching about to say what the government wanted me to say. I wanted to show everyone how wonderful science is. And I enjoyed learning science at school, and I went off and did a degree in chemistry, and I enjoyed that as well. But so I wanted to pass that on to the students. But now I'm telling them what the government wants them to know, basically, and the actual science bit of it has been sidelined quite a bit, and it seems like people don't really have much time to want to be able to learn about actual science. School seems to be the worst place you want to learn. It seems to be a place where you get results to get a job, and you don't really have to think about what you teach. So, yes. Yes, work it. If you're educating children, if you're passionate about a subject and you want to educate children about it, I'd say don't work in a school. I'd say try and find some other way.
Yeah, sad but true, isn't it? Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. All right. Well, James, it's a fascinating subject, and there's so much to talk about. But unfortunately, I'm pressed for time today, so I don't have a lot of time to continue. But perhaps winding up this conversation, what can you say about some of your thoughts about the education system and the discrepancy between what you thought you were going to be as a teacher and what you've actually become?
What I wanted to go into to do when I was teaching is to inspire people about science, make connections in students' heads about how the world worked, and hopefully make it fulfilling about them. And what I've ended up doing is basically propagating ideas about global warming and how vaccines, GM crops, one-sided ideas that have no backup. It's basically the antithesis of science. Science is all about producing evidence for things. So I've become very jaded with teaching, because it's turned into the opposite of what I wanted to do, basically. So yes.
Well, a very sad, sad note to end things on. I feel there must be something positive we can take away from this, but I'm hard pressed to think of what it could be at this point.
Yes. I'm hard pressed as well.
And the system is stacked against us in so many ways, because even those in the system who are aware of what's going on and can understand the ways that they're being manipulated and everyone else is being manipulated don't have a lot of room for fighting back without rocking the boat enough that they get thrown out. And it's very easy for the system to just get rid of those people who wake up from the matrix, and they can just flush them down the hole and get rid of them quite easily. So it begs the question of how do you start planting the seeds in the children's minds that will flower without you getting, you know, identified and kicked out.
Yeah. Yes. Well, I can do. I do extracurricular science stuff. I can do that, and I think I just need to say it in class. I mean, I'm not monitored that closely. As long as when I am observed, my lessons are fine. I'm not monitored that closely, and I think maybe in some ways the apathy of the management might be an advantage if for example I just offer the opposite opinion, and I don't think anyone's particularly passionately for reducing memory carbon dioxide. I think they just teach it because it's on the syllabus. So I think if more teachers just offered their opinions, offered other opinions, I think actually that would help the students a lot. And I think there'd be a bit of a lag between any problems arising. As long as they got good exam results, because I think that's what schools are focused on, I think putting those opinions in students' heads wouldn't actually do too much harm to anyone concerned, and well, it provides a lot of good. So I think that's what you need to do. I think you just need to offer your opinion in class, and yes, just make sure they get the exam results and you'll be fine, I think.
Well, so, yeah. A pretty sad indictment of the public school system, but perhaps it's nothing that that people should be completely surprised about, given the way that our society has been being shaped for centuries now, really, since the beginning of the schooling system as we know it. But yeah. It's a huge topic, and I very much appreciate the inside baseball, so to speak, or I guess I should use a British term, the inside rugby, footy?
Rugby,
football. Yeah, I don't know. But it is good to have some inside information, and I will put up some of the documents that you linked to me so that people can see some of the wonderful indoctrination that the British children are receiving these days. At any rate, it's an interesting conversation, and perhaps we can talk again sometime in the future to talk more about this topic. But certainly, I hope you can do your best to try to plant those seeds in the minds of the children that will light the fire in their minds that will hopefully one day wake them from their dogmatic slumbers and their apathy over the police state prison that we're being slowly slotted into. But until then, I wish you well, and I hope that you enjoy the rest of your strike.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much, James. Thank you. I hope you have a good evening as well in Japan. So, yes, thank you.